Blog Talk Radio.
How are you?
Great. You're listening to the Just the Freedom Blog Show, and tonight we have Carleen on, and I see we have another person on. Carleen, do you know who that person is?
No, I sure don't. just me.
Okay. All right, we have someone online. Carleen, your number ends with 2846?
Yes.
All right, so caller, I'm going to have to put you on hold. Okay. All right, Colleen, would you introduce yourself to the family?
Yes, I'm Colleen Acock, and I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I'm one of the co-biographers of Joe Gans, the first African-American world boxing champion. My co-author is Mark Scott of Austin, Texas, and we've been writing together for 10 years and writing about boxing for about the last 4 years.
Okay, what makes Mr. Joe Gans so special?
Oh, my goodness, what a great question, and what a perfect time, this Father's Day. I didn't realize that when we made these arrangements to talk today. He is the father of modern scientific boxing, and he was the most people recognize the name John L. Sullivan in the boxing world, but John L. came out of the bare-knuckle days. The last bare-knuckle fight was fought in 1889, and Joe Gans started his professional career in 1891 and became known as the old master, the father of the modern sport. And what's amazing to me is how many people know that. How many people have ever heard his name? Very few.
Now, what was the difference between the modern day boxing and the previous?
The previous ones were fought with bare knuckles. They were bare-fisted fights, and they had different rules. They were quite gory fights before 1891 when Joe Gans fought professionally. The bare-knuckle fights, you could pull somebody by the hair. You could get them down. There was not necessarily any – it was just fight till someone was down. The modern rules came in Britain, but by the time they were still fighting bare knuckles in the United States. But by 1890s, they started having the first championships in the gloved arena. So people were now wearing gloves. Now, mind you, they're not gloves like we recognize today. They looked more like ski mittens or driver's gloves. But they were leather gloves, and they did protect your hands. They went anywhere from 2 ounces to 5 ounces. So it wasn't much protection. But in the bare-knuckle ring, in those days, you wore spikes on your shoes and fought on the ground. And in the bare-knuckle days, you wore leather-soled shoes and fought on canvas in rings and had 3-minute rounds and 1-minute rest breaks.
Two questions.
Sure.
What prompted them to switch from bare knuckles, and who was the bare knuckle champion?
The bare knuckle champion was John L. Sullivan. And in 1892, he fought Jim Corbett and lost his championship. And a new line of glove boxers started from there. But Joe Gans was the first lightweight champion. And the reason that his division, most people think that only the heavyweight divisions are popular. You know, you think of all the heavyweight champions, Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, et cetera. But Joe Gans came in as a lightweight during the lull of the heavyweight years when Jim Jeffries had virtually quit fighting, and he had been the champion. Joe Gans won the championship of the lightweight division in 1902 in Fort Erie, Canada. And he was the first African-American world champion in any sport, not just boxing.
Wow. What prompted you to research Joe Gans?
Well, I love the sport of boxing. I've always loved it. My father was a Depression-era fighter. And was able to spar with Max Baer but my father's story was so sad, so very sad. I mean, if you think of the Depression era, I mean, you remember the movie Cinderella Man. People are Braddock was fighting to give his family some food. Well, my father was under the same circumstances. There was a large family. In those days, if you were a boy, you know, my father and his older brother were abandoned. I mean, by the time they were 15, they were, you know, they should be feeding themselves. The family had other mouths to feed. My dad cut railroad ties for a penny apiece and chopped off his left thumb. Life was brutal then. And my father didn't have any shoes, and he'd gone to South Texas to look for work. And he saw a pair of nice leather shoes in the window. They must have been really nice because they were $5, and I can't imagine what in the Depression, shoes at $5. But nevertheless, boxing was so popular. It was a sport on every street corner in every town. And there was an athletic club and a gym in every town. It was huge. It was the biggest sport, from the 1890s, in addition to baseball, but boxing was huge. And so in the Depression, my father saw a ring, and people were throwing money up there. And the ring announcer said that it was $5. And if anybody wanted to challenge this man, they could step into the ring. And my father did. He'd never fought a day in his life, but he needed shoes. And he won that match, and he was trying to work at a dairy for his room and board so he could finish high school. He's living on his own. He's milking cows at 4:30 in the morning. He's trying to go to high school, and he's trying to box in the evenings to make money for himself. Now,
to
me,
how does this story relate to Joe Gans?
Because here is the connection. My father and all the old boxers will tell you that, and here are the Depression era boxers, you think they had it rough. They always said, man, let me tell you, the black boxers, the early black boxers had it the worst. And I could never imagine things could be any worse from the stories I was hearing at home. But my dad, all the old fighters, they admired the early black boxers. Joe Gans was one of them. And as a child, I used to watch his films that were replayed in the 50s.
So why was it so rough for the black boxers?
First of all, they had to fight more rounds. They had to fight with their arms tied behind their back, essentially. White fighters wouldn't give them fights. They couldn't make it into the championship realm. The white championship fighters could fight 15, maybe 20 fights. Joe Gans fought over 200 fights. I mean, he fought 18 years. These fighters, the early black fighters, fought 2,000 300, 500 matches. I'm talking about matches, not rounds. But they had to fight, and they had to be better than everybody else. And they couldn't, well, I mean, half the time, they had things being thrown at them in the ring. One early black boxer had people with tire arms trying to hit his legs. People have jumped into rings and tried to break their hands. I mean, it was a phenomenal, it was a profession, but it's not like anything we know today.
Wow. So when you talk about these black fighters, did Joe Gaines ever fight a white opponent?
He fought a lot of white opponents, and he was so good. He started as a child in Baltimore. He was born in 1874 and started fighting on the streets of Baltimore in what was the toughest neighborhood, the Green Willow District of Baltimore. And already at an early age, he was known to be the master of that early art. And I would have imagined that that would have been bare-knuckle fights on the street. But there is a lot of evidence that he did use some gloves and that people had given him gloves to practice with. He, in his early life, he practiced against, he worked at a fish market, and his boss, a white fish market owner, also had a brother, and the two of the adults would box the young teenager, so Gans would hone his skills. He was absolutely an incredible defensive fighter, and still today people say that he was the best pound for pound in the history of the sport, and the best defensive fighter. And one of our hypotheses, Mark and my hypotheses in studying all of these early black fighters, is they really had to hone and to create a new style, a defensive style of boxing, because they couldn't come in like the white fighters throwing windmills and blatant huge punches. They had to be more artistic, and they had to have a defense strategy, because they couldn't come in and just knock the white fighter down in the first round. I mean, they wouldn't have survived. So Gans truly was one of those defensive fighters who let the fight go on about five or six rounds, but everyone knew he could put you out whenever he wanted to. Mm. Of the 200 fights that we looked at, over 100 he won by KO.
Okay. Now, what event resurrected Joe Gaines' life?
It's incredible that that you ask about that one singular event, because it was really a moment in time when everything came together to be just the pivotal right moment for Joe Gans, and that was in 1906. Remember, he won the title in 1902, and in 1904, a curious thing happened. Something that many people think he lost the title, but that wasn't true. Our research found that in 1904, he'd gone to San Francisco to fight a white fighter named Jimmy Britt. And Jimmy Britt's brother was part of the trust of many of the athletic clubs, and they wanted the hometown boy to win. Actually, Gans won that fight, and it was a title defense, and he won it. And Randolph Hearst papers, and what we speculate is that Randolph Hearst did not want a black man to carry the world title, and not certainly not in his hometown of San Francisco. So he instructed the sports writer, Naughton, to write this up after the fact, several weeks after the fight, to show that Gans really lost the fight. Really, the other guy won it. But that was incorrect. And so the history books today say that, but once the press has you out for losing a fight and not the champion and so on and so forth, he was virtually homeless in 1905. And a big Western promoter in the state of Nevada wanted to promote gold mining stocks in the town of Goldfield. And also think about the history of what's happening in America. In April 18th, 1906, the San Francisco earthquake occurred, and the banking system was virtually destroyed for months. All of the Nevada silver, gold, and copper mines sent all of their money to San Francisco. They were directly connected to San Francisco banks. With that failing, these towns were going to dry up in a matter of months. So a great speculator, Tex Rickard. He owned the Northern Saloon in the Klondike, was already a millionaire when he came to Goldfield, set up a hotel, saloon there, the largest in the West. Virgil Earp was one of his pit bosses. I mean, he was a very famous character. But he'd never been a boxing promoter, per se, but they needed some event desperately. And he and a bunch of townsmen got together and said, let's promote a fight. And everyone said, well, who's the best fighter? And they said, Battling Nelson. Well, he was the best white fighter. And someone said, well, who's the best fighter to battle him? Well, everyone knew about Joe Gans, but no one could find him. He was homeless. Tex Rickard sent a telegram to Naughton in San Francisco. They found Gans living on the streets, and he had not a dime to his name. Naughton gave him the money to get on a train to get over to Goldfield, and there history was made. That fight was the 42-round Goldfield fight that Gans won, the longest fight in history, the longest fight ever filmed by Edison's new media. And the promotional event that started the last gold rush to the Western frontier. That event was historic, and there are still film clips of that event. It occurred in the afternoon, Labor Day. The temperature was over 100 degrees. Gans had to train down to 133. His last fight he'd fought at welterweight in the 140s. He needed the fight desperately. He did everything he could to dehydrate himself 2 weeks prior to that so he could make weight, and he went into the ring virtually starved. Sadly enough, I mean, he won the fight, but sadly enough, that depletion of his body fluids and his stamina accelerated what he already had, was TB. He was fighting that day with TB, but you can't fight for 4.5 hours totally dehydrated and expect to come out, you know, without some detriment to his health. He died not too long after that, at the age of 35. He died in 1910. The centenary of his death is coming up this August 10th in Baltimore, but it'll be 100 years this August since his death.
Now, in recent history, what resurrected Joe Gaines' name? Is there a book, a film, a movie?
Well, the book... that Mark and I wrote, the biography of Joe Gans, the first African-American world champion. And that's published by McFarland. You can get it online, McFarlandPub.com or Amazon. But that book came out last year, and officially in February 2009. I'm still back in the last century. Mm-hmm. But it's been... a wonderful book for us, and you know, we're very proud about trying to get the word out. It shocked me when I went to Baltimore last year to do a book signing last August, and I did most of the research in Baltimore, and there's not a street named after Joe Gans, there's not a street sign, there's not a school named after him. None of the buildings where he trained or lived or died were left. They were all razed, and it's just sad. I mean, there was no recognition, so I'd hope that a greater recognition would come to Gans in his hometown because he did so much for the city, and he did so much for the world.
Now, as a boxing fan, there's hundreds of boxers you could have written about. Why did you choose him?
Well, that's true. Gans, it turned out to be one of the most difficult assignments, but because there's so much mystery about Gans, he was a beautiful man. I mean, physically, he was a beautiful man. He was a gentleman. He was articulate and stunning, and I couldn't imagine why his name was lost. I mean, I would, for at least 5 years, I would ask everybody on the street, everyone who I met, have you ever heard or do you know who the first African-American world boxing champion was? And no one knew his name. And I thought, here was a man who was who is as famous as the President of the United States. His name was recognized equally worldwide with that of the Pope's during his lifetime. Why is it that no one knows this man today? And that was the motivation for the research. And still today, I still research everything. In every city, everywhere I go, I ask, and maybe some of your listeners tonight will have some information they can share with me.
Now, your father was the first person to tell you about Joe Gaines?
Yes, yes. But every old boxer, every old boxer knows his name. It's just people outside the sport that really never heard of him before. My co-author was a boxer in the Golden Gloves, and all the boxers until the new trainers. I mean, if I talk to the old trainers like Jimmy Williams, an Olympic trainer from the 80s, they all taught the methods of Joe Gans. But after the trainers of the 80s, there are very few people that ever train with Gans methods.
Now, we had a guest on earlier this week, and he said there's a boxing museum in upstate New York, a Hall of Fame or something to that effect.
Yes, I just got back from New York from the Hall of Fame inductions last week. It's in June every year, and they induct, a group of greats. Joe Gans, his plaque is in there. He was 1950. He was inaugurated installed into the Hall of Fame. But, yes, that is a great museum, and it's a great place to visit, a wonderful place to go and meet the fighters. It's a small town, Canastota. And you get a chance to talk to the fighters personally, the Hall of Famers, and many of the guests that visit. So many people were there. It's an incredible week, incredible weekend.
So you stayed the entire weekend?
Yes, yes. It runs from the most important days are from Friday to Sunday. They cast the honorees that are still alive. They have historic figures. Howard Cosell was put into the Hall of Fame this year, but of course he's not there. But a fighter named Little Red Lopez, they grease the fighters up with petroleum jelly, and then they stick their hands in the old-fashioned plaster of Paris or some concoction like plaster, and they stay there, and they explain that this is the old method, and they get a cast so that they can bronze their fists for the museum. So everybody gets a bronze fist in the museum. It's fun to watch the casting, and all of the fighters, current fighters, demonstrate ring techniques, and there are various lectures and book signings, and Mark and I have been there 2 years to do a book signing on Joe Gans.
Right. Now, what do you think happened to the fight world? And can you talk a little bit about Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali?
Well, Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali are just all-time greats. They're just all-time greats. I mean, Muhammad Ali had, if you compare, you get a good sense of what Joe Gans was like by comparing him to Muhammad Ali of today. Muhammad Ali is revered. He's just revered. And Joe Gans was as well. So, I mean, you can't talk to anybody without, their loving Muhammad Ali. His plight is tragic. I mean, boxing takes its toll. I have a sort of, the love-hate relationship with the sport. It's so courageous. To me, it's the most courageous of all sports. You know, here is one man singularly up there against the most primitive sense of fighting and spirit and courage and training and fortitude and endurance with only one other man. No team member is going to come help you out. I mean, you're up there alone. It's a death threat almost when you walk in, when you go through the ropes. Every fighter will tell you that. You know, their hearts beat fast as soon as they go through the ropes.
What about Roy Jones? Is there
all of
it?
I just see that Joe Louis, Mike Tyson, Ali, they all had such great, exceptional talents in their own right, and these are the world class fighters, you know, that compare to the Joe Gans, George Dixon, Peter Jackson. Jack Blackburn was also in Gans' time, but all of those guys were exceptional fighters. I mean, and, you know, hopefully boxing will come back around and we'll have another set of great fighters like we have had in the past.
How many books have you written, and any other books or movies do you recommend our listeners to purchase?
We have a new book coming out. In fact, I just saw it on Amazon, and my publishers, I shouldn't say just Amazon, but McFarlane Publishers, I just saw the cover for it. It's scheduled to be out in December. It's a book, a hardback book called The First Black Boxing Champions. And in that book, Mark and I are the editors, and we also have written chapters in the book, but we invited great historians from all around the country and the world to contribute chapters on the great early black fighters. So it's really the first documented book of the early black fighters. And we start with Tom Molyneux, the first slave to become American champion. And he travels to England to fight Tom Cribb in the bare-knuckle days. He doesn't win the championship, but he's not given the credit in American history for being the first American champion, which he certainly was. And then we go into Peter Jackson from Australia, and he was shunned by John L. Sullivan and Jim Corbett. Neither would fight Peter Jackson. He was much bigger, much stronger, and more scientific. And they were afraid that they would lose their titles to Peter Jackson, much the same way as no one would fight Jack Johnson. I mean, they didn't want to lose their titles. Titles in those days were important stepping stones to, you know, wealth. The purse for the prize fights wasn't that great. Now, Joe Gans did get the largest purse of his time, and that was split. He got the smallest of the purse because he was black, but the total purse was $30,000, and that was in 1906. But where the men made their money was in the movies, so people don't realize that the movie industry really started with these black boxers because they were already stage stars. After they won their title, they went on tour, and they went to every theater around the country, and they would make about $1,000 a week. Which is a lot of money in those days, and on the theater circuit. So they were already stage stars. So when Edison came up with the moving pictures, the first film that he ever filmed in the Black Maria was a boxing match between Jim Corbett and a man named Courtney. And then when the movies went to the West Coast because of they could be shot more easily with the sun out for a full day, the Miles brothers were the great filmmakers out there, and they're famous for making 8 films, 4 of which Joe Gans is the star, and there were four of his fights. Movies were made about Joe Gans. Paul Muni in 1929, he was more famous for winning the first Oscar for Scarface. But the year before, he made a movie called The Seven Faces about 7 wax statues in a museum. And they were the 7 great different men representing different various areas of science and industry. And Joe Gans represented sport.
Great.
So,
Pauline, we're down to our last minute. And I want you to be able to give your contact information on our way out. Could you please spell your name and your website?
That's great. Colleen Acock, Colleen Acock, Aycock. And the book is Joe Gans, the first African-American world boxing champion, and another one out, the first black boxing champions. And the website is easy. It's joegans.com. You can communicate with me there, and I'd love to answer any of your questions or provide you direction for any other research for the early black fighters. They were phenomenal.
Great. Thank you so much, and we'll have you on again.
Thank you. It's just been a thrill. Thank you for all the work and your sharing all of this history with everyone. I just applaud you. Thank you, Leslie.
You're welcome, Carleen. We'll talk.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.